And preparation was the foundation of everything you taught. How did you really prepare your teams for games?
By trying to get them to execute near their own ability level. Taking each game, it's an old trite statement that you play them one game at a time, but it's equally true. And if you start looking ahead, then you will not perform as you're capable of performing. Or if you dwell in the past because you did real well in the past, that's not going to have anything to do with how you're going to perform the next time. So you've got to prepare individually for each and everyone, and not let the what's happened before, what's likely to happen in the future, affect you, knowing that the only real way that you can affect the future is by what you do at the present, and what's happened in the past cannot. Now, I wanted them to have respect for every team we played, regardless of how they had done prior to that. Don't fear them. And don't give them no respect. You must respect everyone and just make the effort to execute near your own ability level.
I know that repetition was a major part of how you train people. As you said, it's one of the laws of learning. I think a lot of people in life avoid repetition. They think it's boring. What is your reaction to people who think repetition and hearing the same things over and over again is boring?
Yes, I think it's been said that consistency is the last refuge of the unimaginative. But I feel that that's the way habits are formed, is through a consistent repetition. And now I must change my drills a little bit, still teaching the same thing. And I might, as time goes by, change the amount of time that I allow for certain drills. Some groups will pick up a little quicker than others. You have to constantly be analyzing those under your supervision. If you're not, and don't make it fun. Bill Walton recently on an interview said one thing about Coach Wood, he made practices fun. Even though we did the same things in many cases every day, there would be little changes, and he made them fun. Well, I never wanted him to feel it was a chore, but I did want them to feel that during that hour and a half to 2 hours we're going to spend on the basketball floor, that's where I wanted their minds 100%. I don't want them thinking about other things, and if there are people up in the stands watching them, I don't want you performing for them. You're just working to improve yourself. Now, but as soon as practice is over, you're not a basketball player. Nope, you're a student at UCLA, and that must be your main consideration, because that's why you're here.
I know that a lot of these values were installed in you by some of your coaches. I know at one time you were offered the opportunity to go play for the Celtics and go barnstorming across America for, what was it, around $5,000 in those days, when $800 a year was a huge sum of money? Tell me about that.
The old pro league broke up the year I graduated, and they were forming a barnstorming group consisting largely of the old New York Celtics at that time, and the Cleveland Rosenblum Celtics is the name that they went under the new one. And they did offer me $5,000. Well, I took a job at $1,500, and where I taught 5 English classes a day as athletic director and coached football, basketball, baseball, and track. And I turned this down, but I went to my college coach, a man of extremely high principles, a very high principle man. And I told him about this, and, oh, he said, that's a lot of money, isn't it? Yeah. Well, it sure is, yes. And he said, is that what you came to Purdue for? I said, well, what do you mean, Mr. Lambert? And he said, to go into professional athletics of that sort, professional basketball? I said, no, I didn't. I came to get an education. He said, did you get one? I said, I think so. And he said, well, I think you ought to take advantage of it. But that's a decision that you have to make. You have to decide for yourself. But he was very wise in things like that. There are other things along that line that he did that probably subconsciously had an effect on me.
Tell me a little bit about Coach Wooden, the ball player. I know you're one of the only person that's ever been elected into the College Hall of Fame as both a player and a coach. What were you like as a player?
Well, I can only tell you what other people have said. I'm proud of the fact that I was been selected in the all-time high school basketball team in Indiana. And as a matter of fact, Oscar Robertson and I were selected as the starting guards on the all-time wow. team and on the all-time college team from Indiana. And I'm proud of that. But the game has changed so much. And when I read and hear things that list me along, see with either Oscar Robertson or one of those, I kind of chuckle because I know it isn't true. And but I'm happy that I was considered to be one of the better ones of my particular era. I enjoyed playing. I was considered one of the better defensive players. And I'm very proud of the fact that at my senior graduation that my coach had said that in spite of the fact that I'd just broken the Big Ten scoring record, that never entered my mind, that I was one of the most unselfish players that he ever had and the best defensive player that he ever had. But more than that, he said, what made that, I believe he's the best conditioned athlete for playing any sport that I've ever seen. Well, now, condition I worked on. I knew that's something over which I had control. I didn't have control over my height, and the Lord had given me quickness and speed, and I could, by proper execution and keeping balance, and balance is more than just physical balance. Many people think of it in those terms, but you can't have physical balance unless you're mentally and emotionally balanced. That, yes. that must precede.
Yes.
It's like attaining condition. You can't attain the best condition unless your mental condition and moral conditioning precede it. But I know that today's players and the things, no, I don't compare with those at all, but I enjoyed playing and enjoyed being considered one of the better ones of my time.
How did you mentally prepare your teams, and how did you physically prepare them? I know, I remember you saying several times that your teams might meet teams that were more skilled, but they never meet teams that were better conditioned. And it seems like you used the same strategy that you used in your own life with your teams. But how did you prepare them mentally and physically?
Well, I would tell them that we must be in the best possible physical condition. We may not be able to be better than others because maybe the other fellows try and do the same thing. But we do have control of our own conditioning. We must make the effort, and it's a combined effort. I have a responsibility to devise drills, and I must study and analyze each one of you and have drills individual, and drills. Some drills will be good for all, and some drills will be good just for certain individuals. I must know how to apply these drills in practice. I must not continue them too long. I must know as the season progresses how they're going to change, and I know how I must devise new ones to prevent monotony, and all of those things that I must do. But young men, you have responsibility too. Your responsibility begins every day when practice ends until you return, because you can tear down more between practices than we can possibly build up during practices. And I know that many of you are probably thinking I'm speaking of immoral conduct, and certainly that isn't conducive to the best physical condition. But we must just practice moderation in all things. And if you practice moderation in your eating and rest habits and other things, then with my living up to my responsibilities, we'll come close to realizing the physical condition that we're capable of. We can't do it perfectly because no one can be perfect, but let's work toward that end. And I tried to get them to accept that and to say, now, if this is going to pay dividends for us, we must put pressure on our opponent from the very beginning, and not just on defense, but on offense. We must keep pressure. We must try the fast break every time, but we mustn't end with a bad shot. But we must make them move to get back and make them aware of that. And if we are in better condition, before the end of a half, it'll begin to pay dividends, and before the game is over, it will pay dividends. Now, my problem was to sell that to the players.
And, when they were exhausted.
I tried to do it, but I didn't condition by running laps or running up and down stairs or doing push-ups or running penny cup games and things of that sort. I did it through the individual fundamental drills. A shooting drill for us was a conditioning drill, the way I ran it. There was no resting in between, always working.